This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Today, I'm lucky to have Julie Burgess-Manning with me. She's a registered psychologist and family therapist, and we've got exciting news. We're going to be talking all about how we get to say no to our tamariki more and how we can make that okay and less stressful for us and our kids. Thanks for joining us for Being Real Parents with me, Anna, and my colleague and buddy,
Kate. We work in the parenting space.
And it's here where we'll talk about our worlds as parents, the good, the not so good, and the hilarious, and mix this with what we know about behaviour and psychology. Lovely to have you.
Thanks, Anna. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, really nice to be here. So you, obviously, clearly you and I are good buddies, which has been a delight, and we also work around the same field. Mm. And probably you should introduce yourself more than I should. I'm really bound to muck.
Okay. So as Anna said, I'm a psychologist and a family therapist. And I guess I'm quite interested in, a lot interested in how people relate together rather than perhaps individual kind of cognition stuff that other psychologists might be interested in. So I talk a lot with my clients and people I work with about how they get on with each other and what affects that and looking at the wider context stuff, really. So I've been doing family therapy for probably 25 years now and with time off to have my own children. And I came to it. Do you want to know a little bit about how I came to it?
Yes, I actually really do.
Well, I guess I came to it like many people come to their disciplines by personal experience. And my family, my dad died suddenly when I was 15. And so my mum remarried and that threw me into a step family, which was very interesting from the inside and from the outside. I was old enough that I could come out of it. You know, I wasn't in the home. So by then, so I could see what was going on, and I ended up doing that for a doing some exploration of step family work for my honours thesis.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so that kind of underpinned my family therapy training as well. And, you know, I've gone on to do some work with anxiety in kids and did the Worrybug Project and then the books and the movies and stuff, and then I went on to do the Champion Centre book as well.
That's right, so, with the Pukekle.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's quite that's quite the journey, isn't it? Yeah, but, you know, it's always through personal experience that we get here. So nowadays, where would we find you?
Well, so I'm working for myself at last.
Yeah.
And I've done all the work for the DHBs as they were and various NGOs, and I work in private practice in Christchurch now, and I also work for a fostering agency as a consultant therapist.
Cool.
So helping carers to figure out how they're going to work therapeutically with the foster kids that they're looking after.
So if somebody, so you work in family therapy.
Yep.
And if I felt like I wanted family therapy, could I get in touch with you?
Sure.
That?
Yeah, sure. What? I don't think I'd see you, Anna, because you're my friend.
Ethical issues there.
Yeah, yeah. Must be a boundary cross. Yeah. There's not many family therapists around because it's quite difficult to train in family therapy here. So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and also people don't tend to turn up for family therapy because they think, you know, well, I'm talking as a white middle class person, we think kind of problems are rooted in ourselves and we don't tend to look outside for relational issues unless it's a couple issue. So bringing your family to family therapy is a big step.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right about that. We often think about it as ourselves or another, you know, as well.
They're a narcissist or they've got a problem and Yeah,
that's really interesting. Cool. Mm. So what sort of, how would I know that I need to go and see a family therapist?
You might have some issues in your family that you want to talk about that are quite awkward or difficult, or something's coming up, or in the future that you want to be able to talk about with some help from somebody else. Mm-hmm. Of course, many times I end up in family therapy, or families end up in family therapy, because they come to me and they say, we've got this problem with our child, say they're anxious or something.
Yeah.
And I say, well, actually, it's not the child. families Which don't like to hear that. And it's not about blaming them. It's about looking at the dynamic that's developed.
Yes, that's right. I mean, the systems that,
that allows
about
the anxiety to be in there. And so, yeah, it's not the child. The child might be showing some anxiety.
Which is why we want to talk about the saying no.
Yeah. So, shall we talk about that now?
Love to.
You're listening to Being Real Parents with Kate and Anna on Plains FM 96.9.
So, yes, I'm really interested in the it being the parent's issue and not the child's issue. I'm also really interested in the saying no things, and I can't wait to get started on this conversation.
Yeah, let's see where
it
takes us.
Lead
the way. So I've been thinking, the reason I suggested this topic really is I've been thinking quite a lot about how I see people of my generation not being able to say no to children.
Yeah.
And including myself sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Me. Absolutely.
And how, where's that come from? And also, is it useful?
Mm.
You know, and actually I quite like the idea of saying no to my children.
Yes, and I resent myself sometimes when I don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about the generation before us, and for me that was an English history and of people who went through the war as children probably, and whose parents couldn't afford to spend too much time on distress because there were very practical things you had to do to make sure you survived, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got that idea of stiff upper lip English people, and
yes.
I think that's where it comes from, is that we just had to get on, you know, what was that saying? Calm down and...
Oh, carry on.
Carry
Keep
on.
Calm and
Keep
carry
calm.
On.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, right? So let's wrap it all up and leave it. But I think that if we don't teach our children to experience distress and that they can manage it, if we're always saving them from that, rescuing them from it, then they can't manage the world later.
So I'm triggered because of the word distress.
Mm.
Can you... I know, stop looking at me like that. So, because I know that distress doesn't mean trauma.
Absolutely.
No. So let's define that perhaps.
Okay. And I think, that's another interesting thing I've been talking a lot about lately. What is trauma?
Yeah.
Because trauma's come much more into mainstream language, that word.
Yes.
And actually it used to mean something more dreadful than it tends to mean a lot now.
Yeah,
our kids use it all the time, right? It was traumatic today.
I know.
Yeah.
So many words have done that through.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that's occurred. It's like, anxiety has become, nervousness, pensiveness,
Absolutely.
Apprehension, those sorts of things. And depression has become sadness, feeling low, upset.
Yeah. They're the same instead of being the worser.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of diagnostic language has come into the mainstream too.
Quite, that's exactly right, yeah. Distress.
So distress, yeah. So when I say distress, I mean you've got upset, right?
Yeah.
You've got an upset child. So they've gone on social media when they got home from school and discovered that everyone else in their friend group has been invited to a party and they haven't.
Got it.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So that hurts you as a parent too.
I know. It's those emotions that we feel through our children.
Mm.
Yeah.
And they're upset.
Yeah.
But... So there's an option there. You could go and ring the parent of the person whose party it is and say, hey, my child hasn't been invited, I'm bringing them over now.
And I'm laughing, but I know that happens.
Yeah. Or the next day at school you go up to the children and say, well, how dare you leave my child out of your party any of those parental responses.
Yeah.
Or you can have, there are a million responses, aren't there? Or you can say, that's really hard. I'm really sorry that's happened. Mm. That must feel awful.
It's the same, I think, when our child gets a low grade on something, that instead of supporting them with the low grade, we externalise that to blaming something or someone else.
Yeah.
And so going into the school and fighting on our child's behalf or something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's that rescuing our children from, one, yeah. responsibility, and two, the emotions that come with
yeah.
it. But, I'm trying not to talk too much because I'm so interested in you, but for me, when I do that, because yeah. I do that, my go-to, if I didn't know something about parenting, I'm pretty sure that I'd be helicoptering
yeah.
nonstop, yeah. yeah. Because that's my go-to. I want yeah. to rescue my kids. And I think, you know, it comes from, I know what it feels like to be disappointed,
yeah,
feel like a failure, all of those that sorts of things. And I don't want that for my child, but I know that they have to feel those feelings too.
I think we also know that the world isn't fair.
Yeah.
And you get up on, not you, everyone gets up on their soapbox, maybe you.
Yeah.
you know, and goes, actually, that isn't okay and I'm going to make it right.
Yeah.
And sometimes I know that I've got more power than my child has got to yeah. make it right in
That's
that situation, right?
right?
Yeah. I can go in and make something happen, whereas they couldn't.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the power of letting your child sit with it. I've seen this happen, right? So you've talked about this a lot. You've talked about the power of acknowledging emotion rather than dismissing it, yeah, and how that might take a little bit longer, but actually then the child is able to process the emotion and they come out of it in a better space, mm-hmm. right? It's a similar thing, isn't it, that you acknowledge the emotion and then they're able to go, okay, now what do I really think about what happened?
Yeah.
And they can deconstruct it and they can talk through it. Depends what age we're talking about,
yeah.
but, you know,
yeah.
they can talk through, use verbal processing to talk yeah. through what's going on.
Yeah. Because what I worry about is that if we don't allow our children to feel these big feelings, that they have no baseline as they get older.
They've got no experience of what to do with that. And what are we going to do when they don't live with us and they're over in, I don't know, Paris
and
their boyfriend
dumped.
Drops them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny when we both go to that. Because I think that was my first experience of real.
Yeah.
But also have felt that in the past as
Yeah. So, you know, they've got to grow into independence and this is one way we teach them to do that. And that's actually how the world is, that the truth about the world is that you don't get given everything.
So why aren't we allowing our children, like you, we started this conversation with our generation, yeah, and, you know, our war generation, stiff upper lip, da-da-da-da, and I, you know, why is it that we find this so difficult? Why are we helicoptering
it? I think it's about our own regulation. I haven't done any research into this. So I have to put my hand up for that. But and I should do some now. I've been thinking about it. But my guess is that we don't know how to deal with our own distress. So when you see your child in that situation, you feel the feelings yourself, a reflection of them, and you want to shut that down. You want to get rid of that feeling, right?
Yeah.
And so one way you do that is to fix it.
Yeah.
And so perhaps that's it, that we just have not been able, we haven't been regulated ourselves.
Yeah.
I think I meet adults all the time that have never had somebody who's held them safely in the world. And so they don't know how to hold their child's distress. So it gets too big or it's dismissed.
Somebody said to me that in order to be, so one of the ways we know that we can support our kids, you know, in terms of regulation is being able to understand and know emotions, right? And that includes being able to name them. And I remember when I first did some training around this, the sort of question was, you know, write down as many emotions that you can think of. And I think I got like 10. And apparently the deal is to be literate, emotionally literate. You have to know like 35 or 40. And if you think about that in terms of our generation and how many times we heard emotions being talked about.
Yeah, probably not.
No way.
Mm.
I got, don't be angry. There's no need to be sad.
Stop crying.
Just be happy. Be grateful.
Why aren't you? You know what? I think there has been a big focus on naming emotions because that is really useful for little kids.
Yeah.
to help kids know what they're feeling and organise themselves around the feeling, you give them the name of the emotion.
Yeah.
But there's got to be more than that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm preaching to the converted.
No.
Yeah. So going on from there, we have to be able to sit in the presence of some strong emotion.
Yeah.
One way I help families with this is to tell them, and I went when I knew I was having this talk with you, I went looking for this where I found this idea from, and I can't find it yet again. But
we'll do part two.
Let's assume it's true.
we'll do part two.
That emotions, big emotions, usually last about 20 minutes.
Okay.
So the physiological response we have in our bodies takes about 20 minutes to go to a peak and then come down again.
Mm.
And if you think about a tantrum in your child, it's probably about right, eh? Mm. It builds up, they have their major thing, and then it comes off and you're all exhausted and it's taken about 20 minutes. So if you know that's helpful, because if you know that this distress isn't going to last forever, if you deal with it in an okay way, then you know that you can probably manage through 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they might be sad after that.
Yeah.
Or they might be less distressed, but the main physiological response is not going to take too long.
Mm.
We're talking about everyday things here. We're not talking about major traumas.
No, quite. We're just talking about distress, as you said. Okay, that's interesting. So 20 minutes. Yeah, that feels kind of manageable to support my child with, and, you know, like my teenager.
Yeah. So shall I talk a little bit about how you manage?
Yes, please.
So one of the main things is about reflecting and acknowledging feeling. So you're naming the feeling, you look really sad, I'm really sorry to hear that, giving some empathy, not giving your words to it so much as their words, not saying, oh, yeah, that happened to me when I was 15, and this is what I did. It's it's hearing that happened to me when I was in Paris.
me too.
Okay, let's not go to that story afterwards. So reflecting the emotion and naming it and being the parent that can absorb it.
Yeah.
So you can manage this big emotion that they're having. Oh, that looks really hard. Oh, you're really sad about that. And giving them a cuddle or doing whatever it is that you do that helps to reassure. This has to happen within a caring and trusted relationship.
Yeah.
You can't do this to a kid who... You can't do this with a kid that you don't know.
No, quite.
Yeah. I mean, you can do the empathy, but you wouldn't imagine that you'd have the trust there to be able to... So that's kind of a given.
Okay.
Yeah. So then it's about helping them to verbally process. So talk about what's happened.
Yeah.
So, Mum, it's awful. They've invited them, but they haven't invited me, and it's not fair. And, you know, and then you're going, oh, you're kind of reflecting and empathising, but you're moving to helping them to deconstruct what's happened and how they might understand it, right?
Yeah.
And then I think that there's a point then that you decide that's probably enough.
Okay.
If I think some kids will go on and on with that.
Yeah.
Or they might go on and on with the distress and re-experience.
Yeah.
And so if you are getting to the point where you think you've kind of done it, then you could be saying, listen, I think now I'm going to go and have a drink. Do you want a drink? Or there's a option for distraction or for just giving space, right? So you leave them with the feelings once they process the majority and it's come down a little bit in distress level, and so that they can be left to go just be sad with it or whatever, right?
Yeah. Which is the hard bit, because that means we actually aren't doing... We're doing a lot, but we're doing nothing. Do you know what I mean? And I think... that it's kind of like I'm wondering, how do we know as parents, like, what are our kind of like signals that we're moving into fixing and rescuing when we should just be following a process of supporting.
So when you're saying things like, oh, have you tried, or what about this, or did you think of...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
I'm going to get on the phone.
Yeah. Or, you know, did you ever read that book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus?
Oh, years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a bit like that. Like we put it all on the men that they're the ones that come up with solutions and women are the ones that just want to be listened to.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that with kids. We just want to... We need to do the listening first.
Yeah.
And then I guess you might say to a kid, you know, what would be helpful, you know? If you want me to help with this, what would be helpful that I could do? Mm. Rather than going, hey, I've got an idea, let's do this.
Mm. And if our children, real life example, okay, I was on a radio station recently because I was being asked about how do we support our children because Taylor Swift wasn't coming to New Zealand and parents were really angry about it. Stop laughing. And parents were really angry about it and really hated Taylor Swift because of that, because they'd promised their children that they would be going and didn't want to let them down, right?
Mm.
So, of course, I had to go on and talk about it's okay to be disappointed.
Mm. Yeah, it's actually, I think, something kids have to experience, disappointment.
Yeah.
Actually, if you haven't experienced disappointment and you've grown up, that is going to be really tough for you, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, so, it's almost like we need to think about this as supporting our kids to be resilient.
Yeah, yeah. And actually that would have been a great opportunity for a parent to go, I'm going to help my kid experience disappointment now, because that's a big ask to take your kid to Australia, right?
Yeah, because that was what parents were doing, is that they were buying tickets to go over to Australia to go because they didn't want their children to feel disappointed.
So ticket to Taylor Swift or ticket to disappointment?
Yeah, and ticket to resilience.
Ticket to resilience.
Yeah.
Actually, I looked up resilience before I came here.
Good.
Because I was thinking about that in relation to this talk.
I like all the research that you've done.
Thank you.
Good.
And one of the things back in the... this is from 2004, actually.
Yeah.
But I think it's relevant. In order to build resilience, you need caring relationships.
Yes.
You need opportunities for your kids to contribute.
Mm.
So not just rely on you to do stuff.
Mm.
They have to be part of it.
Yeah.
And they need high expectations.
Interesting.
So that's not something we usually do, is it?
No.
High expectations. But expectations of their behaviour and of their lives, I guess, so that they're trying to meet something.
Wow.
I know.
And then when they don't meet that something, we run through.
That's how they build their resilience.
Yeah.
Or they might meet it, and that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that about resilience. I knew that relationships were especially important.
Yeah, so important, really, really important.
Really important. And in fact, one of the ways that we demonstrate our own resilience is having the ability to reach out for help.
Yes, that's right. Mm. I think that's quite hard for our generation as well.
Agreed. But the cool thing about having our children feel disappointment and see their emotional response to that means that we can be that person and they're learning that skill too.
Say that again. No, I want it to soak in. Come on, it's a good sentence.
It's that thing about if we allow our children to feel disappointment appropriately, you know, appropriate times, and we support them with that in the way that you've just described, there's two things that happen with that. One, they experience, you know, the feeling of disappointment in order that they've got some experience of that and can draw on that when disappointment happens again, because it's inevitable.
And the world doesn't end.
Exactly. And because we're being a support in that for them and with that big emotion, we're also teaching them about it's okay to reach out and ask for support and that people are there for us and care.
Yes. And always thinking... I haven't mentioned two other things. Co-regulation.
Yes.
That's what you're doing when you're regulating your own emotion when you're with a child,
right?
So you have to watch yourself.
Like Bubba's.
Yeah. And so you have to watch yourself and notice your emotion and go, okay, I can feel myself getting annoyed about this or getting sad about this, and I'm going to either put that aside or I'm going to go and have a little break, or what you need to do to co-regulate yourself then so you can actually be in the moment with them.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to say is that little maxim, biggest, kinder, stronger, wiser.
Yeah.
Being that
bigger,
parent.
Bigger, stronger, kinder, wiser. Yeah. We are, though, that's who we are as parents.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. Yes. Even though we might not be that as individuals all the time.
Yeah.
With parents, that's the container you've got around your child.
Yeah. You are bigger, kinder, wiser, stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have to draw on that in order that we can, you know, provide that support, that guidance, put in place the boundaries, say no. Cool. So for the top tips today, the first one is around what Julie talked through in terms of supporting our kids when they feel disappointment. And that is that our job is to comfort them and support them with reflection of what's happened for them, then support them through some verbal processing, which just basically means that we talk it through, and then providing or putting in place some distraction if that's needed, or giving our kids some space in order that they can process more or come through what's going on for them. Number two would be aware of us and our reaction and how we're regulating ourselves and how we're responding to the situation and whether or not it's appropriate. And number three would be we need to know that supporting our kids when they feel disappointment, which is totally inevitable throughout their lifetime, supports them to build their own resilience. That was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming in. What an absolute pleasure and delight to talk to you today. It's a big topic.
It is,
a big subject and something that we feel quite personally attached to, depending on how we've responded to our kids in the past. I am totally, I've done all. I've done helicoptering out and I've supported my kids in this way.
Yeah, me too.
And so, you know, no harm done, but we know now some other ways that support our kids in much more actually supportive ways.
Yeah.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can do that via our website, www.realparents.org.nz, or please go back and listen to our past podcasts if they're of interest to you and you want to learn more about parenting. Go to Plains FM and look for Being Real Parents, because that's exactly who we are.
Awesome. Thanks for being with us today.
We hope you've learned that while parenting is challenging sometimes, that's totally normal. It's been fun having you with us. Keep being amazing. Bye!